It's time for the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast, answering your questions from the General's Quarters every week, right here on VolQuest.
Thursday morning. Welcome to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast, presented by our good friends at Exterior Home Solutions. If you have needs for roofing or exterior home needs, you need to check them out at Exterior Home Solutions. Give them a call. They'll come out, give you a free estimate. And we thank them for their support of VolQuest.com. You can check them out at ExteriorHomeSolutions.com. I'm Brent Hubbs, stepping in for Eric Kane, along with Austin Price, Rob Lewis, and Grant Ramey on the mailbag edition of the podcast. And Austin Price out of the gate with a comment.
Yeah, I was just going to say George Jefferson. That's who Eric Kane is, because he's moving on up to the
east side. Moving on up this morning, that is for sure. All right, let's jump right into him, guys. We got a ton of questions here. We're going to get to as many as we can. I'll probably ask you guys a little bit about the SEC at the end as well. A couple of big ball games, particularly that Alabama-Georgia game. So we're going to start with functioning Volaholic. Hooker and Milton seem to rely heavily on the slot position. This year, Squirrel's impact seems to be heavily reduced. Do we expect any changes there? Could Nimrod or Matthews become more of a featured player in the slot? Grant Ramey, I'll start with you. Your thoughts on Tennessee in the slot receiver spot?
I feel like this offense could change a ton because I just don't know how much of it we've seen because there have been three blowouts over the first 3 weeks, and then you went to Oklahoma and you relied heavily on the run game. So I think the passing game in general, not just the slot, just the whole thing, could be subject to change and evolution as we kind of progress here. And what's it look like at Arkansas compared to what it looks like the first 4 weeks? I don't know if y'all feel the same, but it just feels like to me it's early stages. It's, you know, Nico's only however X number starts in, five at this point. It just feels like it's still growing and changing. I think it could be subject to a lot of changes going forward.
I think because the Tennessee's offense has become more versatile, you go back to the NC State game, they ran so much 12 personnel. Well, who comes off the field there, Rob? It's the slot. And so, like, I think you just naturally have had a few tweaks in kind of scheme that have, you know, maybe I could lessen the emphasis on the slot, but it could easily flip if Tennessee's playing a team that, you know, they don't have to max protect and do a bunch of two tight end stuff with.
Yeah, I mean, I think Josh will change, you know, as, you know, game by game. I mean, you know, he'll go in with a plan, but, you know, you saw him running that 51 times at Oklahoma, or, you know, going that much 12 personnel against NC State. I mean, I think he's totally flexible. And but the one thing I will say to that question, I think Mike Matthews' role will grow as the season goes on. You know, I think we'd seen him probably, you know, more if he hadn't had the hamstring in August. But that's one guy in the slot. I think that role will increase for that individual.
Yeah, I don't disagree that it's going to there. I don't know how many people on their bingo card had through four games Miles Kitzelman playing 20 more snaps than Squirrel White, or Holden Staves playing less than 20 fewer snaps than Squirrel White, which goes to Austin's point. If you're going to be in that two tight end look, which Tennessee got into a good bit against Oklahoma as well, by the way, then that's going to reduce the number of snaps for the slot position, whether it's Matthews, Nimrod, or Squirrel White out there.
And you know, not coincidentally, let me tell you who loves the two tight end looks? The outside receivers. Because they know if it's going to a receiver, it's going to them.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm sure that they have no problem with the two tight end look Tennessee has employed and seems to like. I mean, I don't think that was just a one-off over the summer for the NC State game. I think that's something that they're going to continue to play. How much of that they play will depend on how defenses elect to play them, obviously. All right, UT Homer wants to know, when Tennessee goes to Arkansas, will that be the best offense the Vols have faced this year? And the second part of that question, how does the pass protection situation the Vols had at Oklahoma compare to 2022? I know we had Darnell Wright to lock down right tackle, but I recall us using a lot of running backs and tight ends to help pass pro in 2022. Let's start first. Whoever wants to jump in here, Rob, I'll start with you. You've done the preview. Is Arkansas the best offense Tennessee will have faced to date when they go out there next week?
I mean, I wouldn't have thought so if you asked me 4 weeks ago, but now, yes. I mean, not, you know, that's a pretty low bar. let's say that when you're talking about the, you know, the best offenses at Tennessee. And you know, and I'm not saying Tennessee has a bad defense only because, you know, they played bad offenses. But, yeah, I would say it's probably not close. And I wouldn't have thought – I think we all thought NC State, you know, would have been better. You know, we obviously, you know, didn't know how the quarterback would be in week two, but thought that that would have been a bigger challenge. And I think we all thought, you know, Jackson Arnold would have been a little more settled in week four, and that was very obviously not the case. So, yes, I think this will be the best offense Tennessee faces.
Yeah, I don't know how many people had Jackson Arnold on the bench card after the first third of the season. I mean, I don't think anybody saw that one coming. Grant, when you talk about the second part of his question, Tennessee did help. They did help at the left tackle spot in 22. And it's okay. It's one thing to help, have to help at one tackle spot. The concern is, what do you do if you have to help at two tackle spots, which is what Tennessee got themselves into in the second half at Oklahoma, which is why Tennessee ran the ball a lot in the second half at Oklahoma.
I mean, I don't think it's well, to go back a couple weeks, I don't think it's a dire situation at tackle, but I think you would rather know what you're getting at one spot like they did in 2022 with Darnell at right tackle than to worry about A, John Campbell staying in a game for X number of snaps, and B, Lance Hurd being cleared or playing or whatever's going on at some point, you know, 2 weeks from now. I mean, I think that's the – I don't think it's a better situation than 2022, but it could – improve in 2 weeks, and it could be a non-factor if you can figure that stuff out. I don't think it's the end of the world, but I would rather know what I'm getting from one tackle opposed to trying to figure out what's going on with both tackles.
Yeah, I mean, and I think, Austin, the question is with it's one thing to try to get four tackles to go two deep. Nobody's going three deep at the tackle position, and that's the concern, right? If John Campbell's is managed all year long, so now all of a sudden you say, I've got to have three tackles to play. Well, then if I get an injury, I'm at four tackles. Well, if I have, like I had on Saturday, I'm playing my two backup tackles, and if I have to replace one of them for a period of time, then I'm going to two freshmen. And that's the case everybody has in the country. There's nobody lining up in the country going, hey, we're three deep with experience at the tackle position on the offensive line. That's just not realistic at all.
No, it's not. You know, in Tennessee, you know, they've benefited, like if you look at like the depth on the D line, like you have some transfer pieces, you have some young pieces, then you have some of those older guys that, you know, that Jeremy Pruitt recruited, and a guy like Bryson Easton or Omari Thomas. Flip it to the you know, offensive side, they have those same guys. They're just starters. It's called Spraggins and Cooper. And so, like, you know, I know those aren't tackles, but like, just when you look at the whole depth of the offensive line, it is not nearly what it, you know, is on the defensive line. And so, you know, the tackle spot, you probably are going to go to those freshmen if you have to go past, you know, options three and four. And, you know, options three and four didn't play exactly great Saturday, but they did enough to mask it and get a win.
All right. Believe in Hype 2023 wants to know what was up with Oklahoma's field.
They painted it. They spray painted it.
I don't think they did.
I was told in the box that they painted it.
I know the end zone was painted. I walked on the field. It did not feel, and when I got bent down and touched it, it did not feel like something that had been painted.
Did you go full Les Miles on us?
Do what?
Did you go full Les Miles? You're like,
I didn't eat it. No, I didn't eat it. It might have been lead poisoning, so I didn't eat it, because if it was painted, I didn't want to do that. But it didn't feel painted to me. It was slick as could be.
The Oklahoma media were talking about that they had painted it, like that there was such angst about how it looked the previous week. And it did look dramatically different, right? Like it looked like, you know.
It was super soft, like it had been watered relentlessly all week long. It was super soft, so.
Here, I have a hot take on the subject. It doesn't matter. Right. How many times is Tennessee going to Norman? When's the next trip to Norman? 2029 or something? I mean, sucks for Oklahoma. Tennessee didn't, you know, escape major injury for the 60 minutes they played there. It's a crappy field, whatever. You don't got to worry about it again. It's over with.
Grant Ramey with Let's Move On, and we'll move on. Very well, Grant Ramey. Volfreak 74 wants to know for you, Austin, we take Brame from Oregon and they take you two from us. Who do you think got the better end of this, Tennessee or Oregon?
Well, I mean, I would tell you that it's probably Oregon, just because offensive linemen, I mean, to get a quality offensive lineman sometimes is hard. And, you know, to get one from the prep ranks is even harder. And so to have had it, to have a class with Utu and David Sanders, To go along with Ogumoro and Nick Moore would have been really, really solid. You know, I love this on Brame. I think he's going to be fantastic. I think he's had a heck of a senior year if you watch his film on Huddle. But, you know, it does not feel like that room. Like, to me, he's more luxury than, you know, the other thing around. I think Utu could have potentially come in here and, you know, again, it's easy to say this, but he could have potentially, you know, found early playing time. But guess what, Hubs? We're in year four, and, you know, most of the you know, people playing have either been here or are transfers.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I mean, again, it's different positions. It's hard to make that comparison one versus the other. But you had needs, certainly, on the offensive line, and you continue to have. I think it's a nice class Tennessee's put together. But anytime you can get big-time help there is certainly a big deal. All right, 45-5. Can you talk about Jesse Perry and Bennett Warren? What needs to happen to get those guys ready for some games down the line, whether it's Arkansas, Florida, Kentucky, Mississippi State, et cetera? Unfortunately, it seems evident that Campbell isn't making it through the season and Hurd isn't a quick healer. Obviously, coaches don't trust Davis and Larry Johnson III. See the second half against Oklahoma. But, Rob, is it realistic to expect a freshman offensive tackle that arrived in June to be of any kind of help for you in that that following fall? And we've talked about Jesse Perry's growth, but he is still a guy who played in a single wing situation in high school.
Yeah. I mean, what needs to happen is they need to get older and stay in a strength and conditioning program for a couple of years. I mean, Hubbard, seriously, who has come in here and started as a freshman at tackle? And I'm thinking that I can remember AP, Wanya Morris,
Darnell
started a couple of games.
Michael Munoz.
Juwan James, first round draft pick. Wanya Morris just played, was starting for Kansas City.
Got a Dutchman.
Yeah, here's the thing.
My point being, if the guys who do it play on Sundays pretty quickly. I mean, Jesse Perry, there's nothing wrong with Bennett Warner and Jesse Perry. They're just, they need time.
Well, and here's the thing about those situations you were talking about. I mean, Wanya Morris and Darnell Wright, even though Darnell Wright was too heavy, I mean, they were given a starting job when they handed out the uniform. Same with Juwan James. They didn't have any other options, period. So it was like sink or swim. Now, they were very talented, okay? And so they were in a sink or swim situation with those guys, and that's where you're trying not to be. We'll see. I'll be curious to see what all this thing looks like this week. And I mean, I think you have to push them hard this week, Grant, with the open date. Not so much for them to replace, you know, a Dane Davis or a Larry Johnson, but just to have them available. Like, hey, if we have to go that route, can we make it through? I mean, what can we do with those guys if they're forced to play because somebody's rolled an ankle or something? I think you have to think of it that way now, where you probably didn't have that thought as much on your mind 2 weeks ago. Right?
No, and that's what I was sitting here thinking. We didn't have these discussions after NC State because Lance Hurd was on the field and John Campbell was on the field. And that could be the case in 2 weeks in Arkansas, and we could get right back to where it was before, where this isn't, you know, a huge concern or a huge talking point. Now, I think you do have to get them ready to the point where they could play a handful of snaps here or there if they have to in an emergency. But I think that's as far as it goes. I think if you can just get your guys back on the field, everything be fine.
All right. One of your favorite questions here, Austin Price. Brandon SV wants to know, y'all talk about how loud Norman wasn't, which got me wondering, what stadium or game have you not been to that would be on your wish list to cover?
Well, the only place in the conference that I've not been is Texas, and that's because Tennessee's not been there. I'd really like to go to Camp Randall. I'd like to go to the Horseshoe or Michigan. That's probably about it. I mean, I don't have none of those ACC schools get me all jazzed up to go to. Now, I'd love to, Tennessee did a home and home with like Boston College. You know, I don't want to go there. I'm not talking about atmosphere. Just be something different. But as far as wanting to see an atmosphere, Wisconsin at night.
Penn State whiteout would be cool.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I've been to South Bend, but it was like a Temple game in the middle of the afternoon. I'd like to see a big game there at night, or evening or whatever. I'd like to go back to Oregon, with a Tennessee team that has a pulse and isn't going to get beat 52-7 or whatever that was, and 14, 13. That would be a good one. Texas too. Yeah, I'd like to see Texas. Big game at night there would be cool. We'll see that.
Rob Lewis, you got a bucket list?
I want to go with AP when Tennessee has that home and home with Edinburgh University. I want to be AP's caddy on that trip.
Can we get that lucky?
Yeah, I would like to see an Army-Navy game at some point in my life. I don't want to sit out in the cold is the problem with experiencing the Army-Navy game, but I would like to experience that because I think
I would have liked to have done that at Army or Navy. I wouldn't, now that they play it at the NFL stadium every year, I get why they do that. I'm sure it's awesome. You know, so many alumni in those big cities, but as a total outsider, I think it would be cool to
be on their campus.
Yeah, to see it on one of their campuses.
Hubs, with your extensive background covering the Vols since 1915,
I rode a train to Pasadena.
Off to
Oklahoma on the way to play, by the way.
Got off the top of your head, some of your favorite atmospheres outside of Knoxville. Go back as far as you want to go back.
In terms of like it's a hard, hostile place to play. Athens, Georgia in 22 was ridiculous. It's crazy there. LSU in 2000, that night game that was pretty early in some of my travels. That was a crazy loud game. Really loud. Obviously Florida's Florida. That 0-1 game was nuts. I really enjoyed going to South Bend. I really enjoyed
South
Bend. I thought that was, I never grew up a fan of that program, but it just oozes with tradition and history there. And of course, part of it's because of the movie Rudy and all that stuff. You see all those things, but that campus feels completely open to visitors, or it did. It may be different now, but you could go anywhere you wanted to go. It felt like when you went there and just kind of walk around. So I probably took in more scenery at South Bend than I have any other place that I've been. But in terms of loud, man, Georgia 22 was as loud as a place you've been to. I mean, that place was crazy loud that night.
I'll say this for Oklahoma. That atmosphere didn't deliver because the team didn't deliver. Like, that's a hard team to stay behind for 60 minutes when they do nothing on offense. I mean, they had negative 26 yards in the second quarter. They didn't have they didn't get past a third down on any of those possessions. I mean, that was disastrous. And I think if Oklahoma gets back to being Oklahoma that people expect, that atmosphere will be fine, and it's going to be a tough place to play, just like it was for Tennessee in 2014.
I did enjoy Cal. I don't know. I just like the way the stadium sets down and the hole. And
you really enjoyed the weed and the trees.
Yeah, the people in the trees is what AP likes.
Why you got to take it there, man? I'm just talking about how the stadium was. I mean, I like smaller stadiums. So, I like going to Vanderbilt. I think it's fun. I like rolling in there 5 minutes before kickoff, and nobody stops you when you pass the meth lab.
And you don't need binoculars.
Botogs working in there.
You don't need binoculars.
It's harder for AP.
Rob was a big fan of the tofu sandwich that they served as a pre-trailer.
Well done, tofu hover. Well done, only. I wanted to go back to Grant's point. He was talking so bad about Oklahoma. So, Grant, you don't think if Oklahoma played Tennessee 9 times that they would win 9 times?
I don't think.
And you love Brent Venables. I love Brent Venables.
I don't think if they played 9 more times, Oklahoma would win 9 times.
Hey, Hugh Freeze is 17 snaps away from being undefeated.
Aren't we all?
RJP3 VFL. Given the idle week, where will coaches be traveling for recruiting with the bulk of the class done? Who are potential players, the high school players the staff is evaluating? Is there anybody they're trying to flip, AP? Where's some travels this week, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you'll be guys over the mid-state, like they're going to see Ethan Utley, going to see Rodarius Jackson over in Memphis. And then, you know, this week's mostly about just checking in on the kids you have committed, right? Like, I mean, because let's face it, I mean, you have a pretty good class, and naturally other schools are going to see or trying to work on Travis Smith or trying to flip Doug Utu or trying to, you know, flip different guys. So a lot of this week is more about seeing players that are committed, like they're going to see Van Dorslayer, and then on the second bye week they'll go see Brain. And so That's just kind of where, you know, an early snapshot of the war room.
All right. We'll get one more in here before we get a break, and let's go to Big Vol Lover 69. How do we see the receiver rotation playing out moving forward? Nice to have Matthews back. Seems like he will contribute. Do you still see a heavy rotation, or do you see it being reduced and a little more solidified? Grant, you're going to trim it down? You're going to play which? I mean, part of it depends on how much two tight end set you're going to play, I guess. But how do you see that rotation moving forward?
I mean, I agree with what Rob said earlier. I'd like to see more and more Mike Matthews and see kind of what he could do with a little bit of a bigger sample size. But I think it's been more the MO of this coaching staff to slim down the rotations, if there's a rotation at all, as the season goes on. So it's hard for me to believe it grows too much. But at the same time, I'd like to see a little bit of more Mike Matthews.
Rob, what do you think? Anything?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to get huge. I mean, there are a lot of people that had, you know, Dante Thornton dead married in August because of Razzle, and that's clearly not the case. I mean, both those guys are definitely going to play. So, yeah, I mean, I think you toss Matthews into the mix. And beyond that, I mean, does Nimrod keep playing, or is that kind of an either-or situation with him and Matthews? I mean, I think if Matthews comes back and, you know, as part of it, that he probably steals reps from Nimrod, but that's just my opinion.
All right, we got plenty more questions coming up here on the Mailbag Podcast, but first, a message from our good friends at Exterior Home Solutions.
Get Nealon loud this football season with Exterior Home Solutions, East Tennessee's first choice for exterior renovations.
Thanks again to our good friends at Exterior Home Solutions for their continued support of VolQuest.com. Check them out at ExteriorHomeSolutions.com. Let's dive back into some questions here, and we'll go to SMTony62 on a uniform question. Grant Ramey, you're a uniform guy. You're a hat guy, uniform. This is big for you. Why do football teams wear their colors at home and whites on the road while basketball does the opposite? And why does baseball not have names on jerseys?
I have officially no idea. No clue. Not the slightest. The NBA kind of went away from that and started doing the home team in the color, which made no sense to me. It looked backwards, and it just wasn't. I think they just do it because it's always been done that way, and that's it. I should have Googled this question because it is interesting to me, and I would like to know the answer myself, but I don't know the answer.
I have no clue what happens and what goes on with any kind of jersey vibes. And listen, man, just show up and play whatever you bring, right? Whatever you got in front of you, show up and play with it. Vulcan, I literally feel silly asking this question, but I think it might be a legit one. Over, under, there are 16 players currently in the defensive rotation that, barring injury, will likely one day make a 53-man NFL roster. Do we think there's 16 right now?
Like a crop, I mean –
he didn't say defensive line. He said defensive rotation, Rob.
I mean, I would say not necessarily in the rotation. Like, if you just talk like Jordan Ross in the rotation, I'd take odds on him being on a 53-man roster someday. I mean, if you just want to talk defensive players, 16 is probably high. I mean,
I think at linebacker, you got a couple of guys. I mean, we'll see where Peely's at.
Hubbard's got Jermon McCoy going number one like next June if he can get out in time. But
Rod McCoy, I'm the new president of that fan club.
That's my fan club, Rob.
Hubbard has moved. AP, I'm sorry, you've got too many nephews. Hubbard. AP, you like have favorites with a shotgun. Hubbard has favorites with a rifle, with a sniper rifle. AP, you're out here with a 12 gauge.
Grant, you got 16 on this defense right now.
You got to say no. That's too high. I mean, I love the defense.
I feel like I can't answer this question because I didn't think Jalen McCullough would be on a roster this time last year. I mean, yeah. I would lean no just naturally, but I think there's a possibility because I think you've seen – and Jalen McCullough wasn't alone. There were other guys that we didn't really expect to make 53-man rosters that made 53-man rosters, so – it's possible. Also, Rob, that's next April, not June. June's NBA draft. Jermon's going in April.
Della wants to know, AP, are there names to watch for possible flips for the 25 class, good or bad?
Well, I mean, you know, if they can land Isaiah Campbell, then that's technically a flip, right? I mean, he's decommitting from Clemson. You know, I guess It depends on how you look at what the term flip is. You know, is it just from one to the next, or is there a period of, can you count one that has a period of time where they're being recruited? You know, a lot of it depends on who all gets to campus. You know, I mean, do any of these players, the Amari Adams, the DeJuan Morrises, you know, do they ever make it to campus? You know, Austin Howard, who's committed to Mississippi State. You know, if they make it to campus, it becomes real. If they don't, then it was nothing more than just a bunch of chatter and a bunch of talk behind the scenes.
All right. Grateful VFL wants to know the answer to this question. I guess I'm supposed to answer it since I'm the president of his fan club. But he says, I've been pleasantly surprised to see the ability of Jermaine McCoy play up tighter press coverage this year. Is that a skill set that was identified in his recruitment, or one that Martinez has helped develop and now unleashed? Or is it a healthy mix of two? Tennessee liked Jermaine McCoy, Austin Price, out of the transfer portal because of everything he did on the field, his play as a corner. I don't think he got here and they taught him press man coverage. He's a confident player who's got great ball skills and instincts. And to me, at this point, I think you have to make the argument that he's the most significant transfer Tennessee took this past January.
Agreed. I agree with you.
What do you think's going through his mind when Jackson Arnold throws that ball? Like, there's no way he just threw that ball straight to me. Like, straight to me. I mean, it could not have been.
At that point, he's thinking the defensive front that has sped Jackson Arnold up very early in a football game and had him very uncomfortable with where he was. I mean, that was an easy one. Rob, I thought the pass breakup on fourth down in the first drive was a really good play, really good communication between two players back there.
I was just saying he was thinking, this doesn't look like the five-star I was practicing against all August.
That's true. good point. Grateful also wants to know, he says, I think I saw Arian Carter playing a little bit of a spy look in the fourth quarter against Hawkins. Do you think Tennessee will play some spy and mix that up when you're talking about playing Green at Arkansas, maybe Lagway at Florida, and Milrow coming up? Do you think they start to spy more mobile quarterbacks a little bit, given that Hawkins got loose a couple of times, Grant?
I would, just based on what we've seen from Arian Carter and how quickly he closes, how he runs sideline to sideline. Like, I've been just extremely impressed with the athleticism, the speed, the quickness, all that stuff that he has, the physicality that he plays with on top of all that. I've just been – the growth that he's made – year over year has been pretty incredible to watch. So I wouldn't put it past them to spy those guys so you don't get burnt and you don't get loose like Michael Hawkins did a couple times.
Yeah, I would, and I want to slow Grant down. I don't like where Grant's going. Is Arian still available? AP, do you have – because I would like to take him as my Jermaine McCoy.
Well, I did sit in his bedroom and interview him on the bed, so I think he's got to be counted as the nephew, right? I mean, like,
but I was there. Does that not count?
Were you on his bed?
I was guarding the door.
It was one of the more bizarre things I've ever had to do, but like, it was DEFCON around there that day. I love his family, though. They yell at me every week on the Vol Walk. His mom is the sweetest lady, but it was like, those people were driving around and like they were just, it was bunkered down, buddy. I thought we were going through a tornado drill.
I'm a big Seven fan.
Yeah, right? I don't know that I've ever seen anybody's phone ring that consecutively. I mean, it was crazy. The number of times his phone rang in a 30-minute span was just crazy. It was.
Yeah, I have Dave Nathan's phone.
Okay. All right, let's go to Z-Vols. How should Tennessee feel if they enter 2025 with Bishop as the number one running back? Do you lean on Josephs and West returning or going pro? I think it's way too early to be talking about whatever Joshua Josephs and Tyree West are doing at this point in time.
Tyree West can't go pro.
Okay, he can't as a second-year player, right. So everybody just take a deep breath. If Bishop is the running back, is running back one in 25, I mean – don't you have a ton of confidence in DeSean Bishop now?
Look fine to me in the second quarter in Norman, Oklahoma against
– in a critical situation too, by the way, coming off the goal line.
So, I mean, I think a lot of it, it's way too early to tell. But, I mean, I would be comfortable with it, yes. But, I mean, you got a lot to – you know, Cam Seldon's going to come back stronger when he gets a shot. And Peyton Lewis is going to keep coming. And who knows what Dylan Sampson does. Right. I mean, like, there's no guarantee that Dylan Sampson's going pro. I think you just got to let it all play out.
I would feel comfortable with it because of those two guys, because of Cam Seldon, because of Peyton Lewis, because you have quality depth there, and whatever the pecking order is, I would feel comfortable with that situation.
If he's your starter, it means he's better than Cam Seldon, Peyton Lewis, which is pretty good for me.
Well, and you're also going to go with a rotation. I mean, they've proven they're going to rotate tailbacks. I mean, it's not like it's, okay, he's running back one, he gets 34 carries, and running back two gets four. I mean, like, they're going to even that thing out because they're going to continue to rotate back. So my point is, I think he'll be in the rotation, and as a guy you're comfortable with in your rotation, whether he's one or two or whatever, he's going to be a rotation guy for sure. Athron wants to know, will Tylan Green pose a problem for our defense with mobility, given our history of dealing with running backs that can scramble? I think it's always a concern, Rob. I think you feel better about it because Tennessee's linebackers run as well as they run and seem to read things as well as they read things right now. I think you feel a little bit better against a mobile quarterback because of your linebacker play.
Because at number seven, for sure. And also, I mean, and I know Jackson Arnold's mobile, but if Tennessee had been preparing all week to face Michael Hawkins, I feel like they'd have been a little more, you know, right. You know, if Rodney had been yelling at everybody all week long about, you know, stay in your rush lane, stay in your rush lane, stay in your rush lanes, then, I mean, I think they would have been a little less susceptible to him busted out.
You know? I think the biggest thing is we talked about this post game. Like, they didn't move the ball with him even when he came in there, really, until Tennessee decided to put two inexperienced linebackers out there at the same time and let him go 50 yards. And then all of a sudden it was like, y'all get back out there. But by that point, they were down like to the 10.
And they never drove it. I mean, they had a couple like big broken plays.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that point has been overlooked, Austin. I mean, it's like everybody feels like, you know, and I think the OU fans haven't paid attention to it, right?
Oh, like Oklahoma fans didn't know who was in the game. Like, they're like, ooh, we're moving the ball.
Yeah, well, and listen, Tennessee fans at that point were just celebrating, like, hey, this thing's on lockdown, and all of a sudden they start moving around. I don't know that Tennessee fans were completely aware of who all was in the game there. Now, the lesson for those young guys is you better be ready to play, Grant Ramey. You know, and that's a learning lesson for them. They made mental mistakes that they heard about, you know, in film review on Monday and on the practice field on Tuesday. But that's part of the learning curve. I give this defensive staff credit. Keep putting them out there so that you're developing those guys, even though you gave up more yards than you ever wanted to and you erased your scoreless streak.
You just gotta assume that they just thought that's just what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to empty the bench the second half because they got so used to it over the first 3 weeks of the season. Now, the good thing for Michael Hawkins, they go to Auburn next, right? That's the get-right game. If you're Cal, if you're Arkansas, you go to Auburn. That's the get-right game.
Well, this is the first of 10. You don't want to catch him.
You just got to win the first one. Just win the first.
You don't want to catch him the next nine, but the first of 10.
Austin, how big of a recruiting weekend is Florida going to shape up to be?
It should be a good one. It really should. Both Florida and Alabama should be massive. I mean, Tennessee's not really done. I mean, they had a little bit here for the Kent State game, but I mean, you know, it's pretty wild that you're thinking about like halfway through the year before you actually get a real, real true, like heavy hitter recruiting weekend, but that's kind of how the schedule sets up. So be a big one for Florida and it'll be a massive one for Alabama.
S. Pitval wants to know, the Arkansas game looks a little different than it did in the preseason. The Hogs are playing some pretty good football. How difficult do you think it will be playing a night game in Fayetteville against a much better than advertised Arkansas team?
I think every road game gets bigger the more you win. Every night game gets bigger the more you win. I mean, this was one of my buddies was talking before the Oklahoma game, like he didn't like all the hype around Tennessee and all the spotlight and all that. Like, that's what you have to deal with if you're a good football team. Like, you have to deal with high pressure situations, big stages, the spotlight, all that stuff. And every time you win, the next road trip's going to get tougher. The next night game's going to get tougher. Like, that's what you want. You want to be in that spotlight, that relevant, that elite, that, you know, in that conversation. Tennessee showed they could handle it. It's very businesslike at Oklahoma. They need to do that at Arkansas as well.
I don't think it's going to be close. Like, I think Tennessee is just better. I think Arkansas has been, you know, better than, you know, than people thought. But again, as Rob said about a question earlier, it was a low bar coming in. So, I mean, like, that's relative. And, you know, Bobby Petrino's helped them offensively. They put up, what, 700 yards or whatever it was against Oklahoma State. They still only scored like 30. Like, you know, what are they going to do against Tennessee's defense? Tennessee's defense is dramatically better than Oklahoma State's. So, you know, I just think this is a game that Tennessee will be motivated because they're coming in off a bye. If this game was this week, then I would absolutely tell you Tennessee's susceptible, trap game, all that. But you get this bye, get your mind right, get, you know, kind of take a break. I think Tennessee will be ready to go next weekend because they know if they win next week, and they're coming home for the next four.
Rob, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to disrespect Arkansas all that much, but I think the schedule has made them look a little bit better than they are. I mean, I'm not sure how good that win at Auburn was, and man, that Oklahoma State game, that was.
They had 21 in the first quarter and a half of that game and 10 over the rest of the game and two overtimes. Like, how does that even happen?
I mean, I get on the one hand that they, you know, I guess they were a 10-point underdog. They, you know, they played maybe a punch above their weight that game and got it in overtime. But, you know, once they were there, I mean, don't you feel like they just gave it away?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, they just, that was a collapse. I mean, that was a game that you're looking at and going, wait a minute, you know, what the heck happened here? You know, it makes no sense at all. All right. We're going to dive into one more here. And this is going to be Magaval's question. And this is going to be with a couple of different things he wants to know. So we'll start here with Isaiah Campbell is highly rated, but it seems our only competition for him is North Carolina, which to me is concerning. Any opinion on him? Was he let go by Clemson, or did they really want to keep him, Austin?
No, he was not let go. They really wanted to keep him. I mean, you're talking about a player who's ranked, you know, right around the 40th overall in the country. Could go a lot of different places. You know, Notre Dame is swinging hard there. Like, this isn't – I mean, like, sometimes it's not as – I mean, everybody gets too caught up. Isaiah Campbell, when he originally committed, could have went anywhere he wanted to go. Then he committed to Clemson. Spots fill up, you know. So now you're looking at, you know, teams that, you know, potentially would want to get in play there. He's hearing from other SEC schools. I just don't think he's very much interested in them. And so, as of right now, it's Tennessee, North Carolina, with Notre Dame kind of laying in the weeds. And Florida State's trying as well. You know, the biggest question is how far does he want to get away from home? You know, if he's a big homebody, does he overlook the 70 points to James Madison? Maybe he does. I think at the end of the day, though, Mack Brown is going to play the season out, and he'll retire at the end of the year. I think he realizes he messed up even having that talk and in the locker room afterwards, but I think he knows this is it.
Why are we letting Utu walk? Wilfong said Oregon's pitching him to be a tackle, which is appealing to him. If it's that simple, why are we not doing that, at least trying anything to try to keep a guy like that, or is this NIL related?
It's all relative. Like, maybe he wanted to stay on the West Coast to begin with, and Tennessee, you know, had an offer that was just better than everybody else, and now those teams have matched, you know. Maybe
he got caught up in the moment on the Tennessee.
Maybe he got caught up in the moment. Maybe, just maybe, he wants to play tackle. Tennessee's not going to play him at tackle. That's not how they see him. And in this era, you're best to be honest. Because if you tell a kid, oh, yeah, you can play tackle, and you get here and you move him to guard, what are they going to do? Right out the door. That, you know, sometimes it's just better to be honest in this era, and not that that's how Josh Heupel feels about things. So it can be a lot of different things.
All right, last one from him before we get into some SEC talk here. Is it going to be a yearly occurrence of players sitting out for mysterious reasons at Tennessee? You have all the Jeremy Banks theories in 22. Players set out at Florida last year for whatever reason, which hurt us in a key rival game, and then Hurd misses last game for whatever reason. What's the deal with the mystery absences in football games that Tennessee has dealt with?
Well, why are they mystery absences? Because fans decide, well, it can't be just as simple as, you know, they're injured, you know. And in some instances, maybe they're not. Some instances, they are. And so people just run to the grassy knoll. So, you know, people are going to believe whatever they want to on Jeremy Banks. I don't know what he's talking about floor. I guess he's talking about Cooper. I mean, again, we went over that all last year about, you know, the tear in the abdominal wall and all that. And then, you know, that's for Lance Hurd. I mean, you know, his ankle is injured. You know, it's not like he does not have an ankle. That's not a made-up injury, you know. So, I mean, again, how much tolerance can he handle? I think he'll be able to handle it much better against Arkansas.
All right, let's go to some SEC talk here and jump around a little bit here with some games. Pretty good weekend of ball in the league, Grant Ramey. Let's start with Kentucky Ole Miss. It's at Oxford. Lane Kiffin says his team is not really ready for SEC play based on the schedule his team has played, which I think we would all agree with that case. But, I mean, Kentucky on the road, I think this is an Ole Miss whitewash, right?
Yeah, I mean, if it was in Lexington, maybe it feels a little different just because of what they were able to do against Georgia a couple of weeks ago. That's what's made this Kentucky team hard to figure out, because they're coming off 31-6 against South Carolina at home, and then it's 13-12 that loss to Georgia. But going to Oxford, I don't buy Lane's anti-rat poison sentiments. I think they are a good football team. I don't think Kentucky is going to be a very good football team, especially on the road. I don't see how that one stays close like it was against Georgia.
And Rob Lewis, how Lane Kiffin was it that on game day this past week, he does a TikTok with his daughter putting on makeup, getting ready for a game? How Lane Kiffin was that?
He should be teaching a master class in social media for, you know, head coach. I mean, what he did to Hugh Freeze this week and talking about, you know, supporting his quarterbacks was just next level. I mean, to see, you know, the way Hugh Freeze melted down in front of a head, you know, like a deer in headlights, and then to see Lane just, unprompted and so clearly, you know, talking, you know, taking the other side of that coin, that's been my highlight of the week, that off the field for SEC coaches.
I think Hugh Freeze ran interference for Brent Venables, because Venables pretty well torched Jackson Arnold in post game. I mean, he said we pulled him because of the mistakes. Like, he said that RPO that was ruled a lateral, that second fumble, he said there's no RPO in our system where we throw it backwards. And I mean, you're basically saying the kid screwed up and we benched him because of that and the other turnovers. I mean, I thought he was pretty tough on Jackson Arnold as well.
Yeah, I think it'd be fascinating to see how Jackson Arnold responds and where that thing goes from there. Because here's the thing, Austin, I mean, Hawkins came in, did some good things, game was over. You know, I mean, we've seen this, right? We've seen Brian Maurer throw two deep balls and he's the answer. You know, I mean, we have seen this happen.
How dare you go there, Hubbard?
But around the country, we've seen this happen. And then if somebody has a whole week to get ready for a freshman quarterback, and it's a whole different world, right? I mean, it's just it doesn't go very well. So how Jackson Arnold responds will be interesting, because I think at some point Oklahoma
have to go back to him.
Arnold, they're going to need him, and they might need him Saturday on the plains.
Hubbard, give me my comp for Brian Maurer. Go ahead, tell everybody my comp.
Your Will Levis.
Yeah, that's Will Levis. He had two deep balls to DeAndre Hopkins, which was like Brian Maurer hitting a deep ball to Marquez Callaway. And everybody goes, oh, my God, he's awesome. But he's not.
All right, let's go to College Station, Texas. It's not in College Station. It's correction. It is in Jerry's World.
That's right.
Not at College Station, which I'm not really sure why this needs to be a neutral site game, but whatever. Arkansas and Texas A&M get together. Big win for Sam Pittman, Grant Ramey, last week. Huge win for him, given what had happened at Oklahoma State. Can they make it two in a row against the Aggies?
I don't know. I don't know what to think of this Arkansas team yet. I can't figure them out. I don't know how to think about the win at Auburn because of what we've seen from Auburn. I mean, they lost at home to Cal a couple weeks ago, however many weeks ago that was. To start as fast as they did at Oklahoma State on the road early in the season, and then to kind of fall apart and, you know, do everything you can to not win a football game as that game ended. I don't really know what to figure out. I don't know what to think of this Arkansas team. I think you'll know a lot more about them on the other side of this Texas A&M game. And I guess that's a good thing for Tennessee to figure out what they're facing going to Fayetteville. But I just don't know what to think of this team yet.
All right, let's run through. I mean, we're not going to deal with Mississippi State and Texas. I've seen Mississippi State. they got a long ways to go to get there. I think now this is a night game, so it plays into LSU's hands. This LSU-South Alabama game, I mean, South Alabama, you know, boat races Appy State. What does that mean? I think LSU still wins big. I think it's not a problem. But that is a little bit of an intriguing South Alabama team. I just don't think App State's very good. So I think everybody's got LSU, you know, handling that one. And then you go to the night game that's the big one in Tuscaloosa with Georgia and Alabama. Rob, this one, I mean – is this laying in the weeds for Kirby Smart? Is this a perfect setup for him?
I don't I don't know, but I can't take Alabama without their battle captain. First time they go into this war. Can't do it. Just can't do it.
I mean, it feels like Alabama may have something at home, give them at home, but Georgia always has that one game every year where they narrowly escape, and you get this feeling that maybe Georgia's not as good as you thought that they were, and then they come back out, Grant, and they're exactly what you thought they were.
Yes, it was what, Missouri 2022. It was Kentucky 2023. Is that right? I don't know. Last year, I can't remember. But yeah, I agree. It's the only reason it gives me pause is because it's in Tuscaloosa, and Georgia hasn't gone to Tuscaloosa since the Clinton administration, so that's a little bit different. But I just, you know, yeah, without Saban, it's obviously a big deal, a big difference. But we'll see what they look like in that kind of primetime game. But you're kind of spooked by Georgia and what they did at Kentucky. But yeah, they usually kind of come out and have one game like that, and then the next game they go back to looking like a superhuman.
Yeah. I just think Georgia's going to just wear them down. I mean, I think Alabama's going to make some plays. I think this is going to be an entertaining football game. But I think in the second half, Georgia just kind of leans on them and leans on them and leans on them.
Kind of a Michigan Rose Bowl, maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
In terms of back and forth a little bit, and then it just goes the other way.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, like, I just think that's just kind of how I see the game playing out. I mean, Alabama can absolutely win the game, but – you know, which Milrow do you get? What kind of Milrow do you get?
Do you get good Milrow for all four quarters, or do you get, you know, just in spurts? I mean, how does that go? Will be interesting to see. It's hard to see Georgia not showing up, given Kirby's history in big games. They don't no show in those big games. So you don't worry about necessarily them handling the moment that much. I initially thought take the home team in this deal, but the more you kind of look at Georgia's history, they always have that one kind of that makes no sense type game. I think three or four years ago Vanderbilt played them really close in Nashville, and it was like, what are they doing? And you think, okay, maybe they're not as good, and then they just, you know, boat race everybody. They seem to have one of those every year. It's almost like Kirby plans it, and so maybe they've had their one for the year. We'll see. I don't know that they're great on offense right now, but I think they're still pretty doggone good.
I'm just thankful it lines up with the Tennessee bye week. That's what I'm thankful for.
Georgia did go to Tuscaloosa in 2020.
Yeah, that don't count. That was a different world then.
Yeah, that was a different season, right? That was a different deal that year for sure.
Just
so,
a little bit.
Are you masking their Tuscaloosa?
There you go.
I'm social distancing myself from that game, from that memory.
All right. We can go on and on with those forever, but that's going to do it for this edition of the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast presented by our good friends at Exterior Home Solutions. We thank them for their continued support of the site and all that they do. So be sure and give them a call. If you're in East Tennessee and you have needs for your home, whether it's roofing or siding, windows, whatever, they can take care of you at Exterior Home Solutions. He is Grant Ramey, Rob Lewis, and Austin Price. I'm Brent Hubbs. Thanks for joining us. Have a great rest of your Thursday, everybody.
You've been listening to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast every week right here on VolQuest.